Chapter 2. Don't. It scares me yet, to think of it. I repented of it the minute it was done, and I was even afraid to tell you lest your face might betray it to somebody. I didn't sleep any that night, for worrying. But after a few days I saw that no one was going to suspect me, and after that I got to feeling glad I did it. And I feel glad yet, very glad through and through. So do I now, for it would have been a dreadful way to treat him. Yes, I'm glad. For really you did owe him that, you know. But, Edward, suppose it should come out yet, someday. It won't. Why? Because everybody thinks it was Goodson. Of course they would. Certainly. And of course he didn't care. They persuaded poor old Salisbury to go and charge it on him, and he went blustering over there and did it. Goodson looked him over, like as if he was hunting for a place on him that he could despise the most. Then he says, "So you are the committee of inquiry, are you?" Salisbury said that was about what he was. Do they require particulars, or do you reckon a kind of a general answer will do? If they require particulars, I will come back, Mr. Goodson. I will take the general answer first. Very well, then. Tell them to go to hell, I reckon that's general enough. And I'll give you some advice, Salisbury. When you come back for the particulars, fetch a basket to carry what is left of yourself home in. Just like Goodson, it's got all the marks. He had only one vanity. He thought he could give advice better than any other person. It settled the business, and saved us, Mary. The subject was dropped. Bless you, I'm not doubting that. Then they took up the gold sack mystery again, with strong interest. Soon the conversation began to suffer breaks, interruptions caused by absorbed thinkings. The breaks grew more and more frequent. At last Richards lost himself wholly in thought. He sat long, gazing vacantly at the floor, and by he began to punctuate his thoughts with little nervous movements of his hands that seemed to indicate vexation. Meantime his wife too had relapsed into a thoughtful silence, and her movements were beginning to show a troubled discomfort. Finally Richards got up, and strode aimlessly about the room, plowing his hands through his hair, much as a somnambulist might do who was having a bad dream. Then he seemed to arrive at a definite purpose, and without a word he put on his hat, and passed quickly out of the house. His wife sat brooding, with a drawn face, and did not seem to be aware that she was alone. Now and then she murmured, "Let us not into ... but we are so poor, so poor. Let us not into ... who would be hurt by it? And no one would ever know. Let us ... the voice died out in mumblings. After a little she glanced up, and muttered in a half-frightened, half-glad way, "He is gone. But, oh dear, he may be too late, too late. Maybe not, maybe there is still time." She rose and stood thinking, nervously clasping and unclasping her hands. A slight shudder shook her frame, and she said, out of a dry throat, "God forgive me, it's awful to think such things, but... Lord, how we are made, how strangely we are made." She turned the light low, and slipped stealthily over and knelt down by the sack, and felt of its ridgy sides with her hands, and fondled them lovingly, and there was a gloating light in her poor old eyes. She fell into fits of absence, and came half out of them at times, to mutter, "If we had only waited. Oh, if we had only waited a little, and not been in such a hurry." Meantime Cox had gone home from his office, and told his wife all about the strange thing that had happened, and they had talked it over eagerly, and guessed that the late Goodson was the only man in the town who could have helped a suffering stranger with so noble a sum as $20. Then there was a pause, and the two became thoughtful and silent, and by nervous and fidgety. At last the wife said, as if to herself, "Nobody knows this secret but the Richardses. Nobody." The husband came out of his thinkings with a slight start, and gazed wistfully at his wife, whose face was become very pale. Then he hesitatingly rose, and glanced furtively at his hat, then at his wife, a sort of mute inquiry. Mrs. Cox swallowed once or twice, with her hand at her throat, then in place of speech she nodded her head. In a moment she was alone, and mumbling to herself. And now Richards and Cox were hurrying through the deserted streets, from opposite directions. They met, panting, at the foot of the printing office stairs. By the nightlight there they read each other's face. Cox whispered, "Nobody knows about this but us." The whispered answer was, "Not a soul on honor, not a soul. If it isn't too late to," the men were starting upstairs. At this moment they were overtaken by a boy, and Cox asked, "Is that you, Johnny?"
"Yes, sir."
"You needn't ship the early mail nor any mail. Wait till I tell you." "It's already gone, sir."
"Gone?"
It had the sound of an unspeakable disappointment in it.
"Yes, sir.
Time table for Brixton and all the towns beyond changed today. Sir had to get the papers in 20 minutes earlier than common. I had to rush. If I had been 2 minutes later," the men turned and walked slowly away, not waiting to hear the rest. Neither of them spoke during 10 minutes. Then Cox said, in a vexed tone, "What possessed you to be in such a hurry? I can't make out." The answer was humble enough. "I see it now, but somehow I never thought, you know, until it was too late. But the next time be hanged. It won't come in 1,000 years. Then the friends separated without a good night, and dragged themselves home with the gait of mortally stricken men. At their homes their wives sprang up with an eager L, then saw the answer with their eyes, and sank down sorrowing, without waiting for it to come in words. In both houses a discussion followed of a heated sort, a new thing. There had been discussions before, but not heated ones, not ungentle ones. The discussions tonight were a sort of seeming plagiarisms of each other. Mrs. Richards said, "If you had only waited, Edward, if you had only stopped to think. But no, you must run straight to the printing office, and spread it all over the world." "It said publish it."
"That is nothing.
It also said do it privately, if you liked."
"There, now is that true, or not?"
"Why, yes, yes, it is true. But when I thought what a stir it would make, and what a compliment it was to Adleyburg, that a stranger should trust it so,
oh, certainly, I know all that.
But if you had only stopped to think, you would have seen that you couldn't find the right man, because he is in his grave, and hasn't left chick nor child nor relation behind him. And as long as the money went to somebody that awfully needed it, and nobody would be hurt by it, and, she broke down, crying. Her husband tried to think of some comforting thing to say, and presently came out with this. "But after all, Mary, it must be for the best, it must be, we know that. And we must remember that it was so ordered.
Oh, everything's ordered, when a person has to find some way out when he has been stupid.
Just the same, it was ordered that the money should come to us in this special way, and it was you that must take it on yourself to go meddling with the designs of Providence, and who gave you the right? It was wicked, that is what it was, just blasphemous presumption, and no more becoming to a meek and humble professor of, but, Mary, you know how we have been trained all our lives long, like the whole village, till it is absolutely second nature to us to stop not a single moment, to think when there's an honest thing to be done.
Oh, I know it, it's been one everlasting training and training and training in honesty, honesty shielded, from the very cradle, against every possible temptation, and so it's artificial honesty, and weak as water when temptation comes, as we have seen this night. God knows I never had shade, nor shadow of a doubt of my petrified and indestructible honesty until now, and now, under the very first big and real temptation, I, Edward, it is my belief that this town's honesty is as rotten as mine is, as rotten as yours. It is a mean town, a hard, stingy town, and hasn't a virtue in the world, but this honesty it is so celebrated for, and so conceited about, And so help me, I do believe that, if ever the day comes, that its honesty falls under great temptation, its grand reputation will go to ruin like a house of cards. There, now, I've made confession, and I feel better. I am a humbug, and I've been one all my life, without knowing it. Let no man call me honest again, I will not have it. Mary, I feel a good deal as you do. I certainly do. It seems strange too, so strange. I never could have believed it, never. A long silence followed. Both were sunk in thought. At last the wife looked up and said, I know what you are thinking, Edward. Richards had the embarrassed look of a person who is caught. I am ashamed to confess it, Mary, but it's no matter, Edward. I was thinking the same question myself. I hope so. State it. You were thinking, if a body could only guess out what the remark was that Goodson made to the stranger. It's perfectly true. I feel guilty and ashamed. And you? I'm past it. Let us make a pallet here. We've got to stand watch till the bank vault opens in the morning, and admits the sack. Oh dear, if we hadn't made the mistake. The pallet was made, and Mary said, the open sesame, what could it have been? I do wonder what that remark could have been. But come, we will get to bed now. And sleep? No, think. Yes, think. By this time the Coxes, who had completed their spat and their reconciliation, and were turning in to think, and toss, and fret, and worry over what the remark could possibly have been which Goodson made to the stranded derelict, that golden remark, that remark worth $40,000, cash. The reason that the village telegraph office was open later than usual that night was this. The foreman of Cox's paper was the local representative of the Associated Press. One might say its honorary representative, for it wasn't four times a year that he could furnish 30 words that would be accepted. But this time it was different. His dispatch stating what he had caught got an instant answer. Send the whole thing, all the details, 1,200 words. A colossal order. The foreman filled the bill, and he was the proudest man in the state. By breakfast time the next morning the name of Hadley Burke the Incorruptible was on every lip in America, from Montreal to the Gulf, from the glaciers of Alaska to the orange groves of Florida, and millions of people were discussing the stranger and his money sack, and wondering if the right man would be found, and hoping some more news about the matter would come soon, right away. 2. Hadley Burke Village woke up world celebrated, astonished, happy, vain. Vain beyond imagination. Its 19 principal citizens and their wives went about shaking hands with each other, and beaming, and smiling, and congratulating, and saying this thing adds a new word to the dictionary, Hadley Burke, synonym for incorruptible, destined to live in dictionaries forever. And the minor and unimportant citizens and their wives went around acting in much the same way. Everybody ran to the bank to see the gold sack, and before noon grieved and envious crowds began to flock in from Brixton and all neighboring towns, and that afternoon and next day reporters began to arrive from everywhere to verify the sack and its history, and write the whole thing up anew, and make dashing free-hand pictures of the sack, and of Richard's house, and the bank, and the Presbyterian Church, and the Baptist Church, and the public square, and the town hall, where the test would be applied, and the money delivered, and damnable portraits of the Richardses, and Pinkerton the banker, and Cox, and the foreman, and Reverend Burgess, and the postmaster, and even of Jack Halliday, who was the loafing, good-natured, no-account, irreverent fisherman, hunter, boy's friend, stray dog's friend, typical Umlawson of the town. the little mean, smirking, oily Pinkerton showed the sack to all comers, and rubbed his sleek palms together pleasantly, and enlarged upon the town's fine old reputation for honesty, and upon this wonderful endorsement of it, and hoped and believed that the example would now spread far and wide over the American world, and be epoch-making in the matter of moral regeneration. And so on, and so on. By the end of a week things had quieted down again, the wild intoxication of pride and joy had sobered to a soft, sweet, silent delight, a sort of deep, nameless, unutterable content. All faces bore a look of peaceful, holy happiness. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.